Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Today, we'll be talking to basically a Renaissance man. If you look at his reel, if you look at his background, it's just amazing what he's done. Welcome, stuntman, stunt coordinator, director, author, photographer, Rick Avery. How are you doing today, Rick?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. Victoria, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. I actually sound probably a little more animated than usual. I'm really excited about this one because this is something that is completely new to me. Just like when we did the rodeo episode, other than going to the rodeos and watching the rodeo, it was something new and interesting. And I learned a lot that day. And I'm hoping to learn a lot today about being a stuntman. Rick, if you don't mind, maybe just give us a brief background about yourself and we'll get going.
Wow, that might take a long time.
How about, where are you from originally?
I was born in New York City and eventually came out with my parents to California. My father's job brought him out here and we settled in Santa Barbara where I spent my second portion of my teenage years.
And it looked like Santa Barbara was a real good starting point from you. If I read correctly, you started out as a police officer up there, motor patrol. I also read something about you being a veteran and thank you for that. Which came first?
Well, I was drafted during the Vietnam War and served for a couple of years, got to the rank of sergeant and was eventually discharged honorably. When I got out, I eventually became a police officer. It's funny, I went out with a friend of mine, a young friend of mine who was one of my icon friends, got me into surfing, got me into skydiving, got me into scuba diving. He was very adventuresome. We're still friends to this day. He became a police officer and I went on a ride along with him. And right out of the station that day, we went code 3 to an accident. So I was sitting in the car, and as soon as we arrived at the accident, I watched him perform, take command of the situation, and I said, wow, I would really love to do that. The next day, I signed up to be a cop. The problem was, back then, you had to be 6 feet tall, have 32 teeth, and a clean record, and a high school diploma. So I had the 32 teeth and the high school diploma, but I wasn't 6 feet tall. So they said, thanks, but no thanks. But a few years later, they changed the height designation and I signed up. There were 400 applicants. They only chose four. And I was one of the fortunate four to be chosen and went to the academy. I gave it my all. I was top cadet and went on to become a cop. That was where I was ingrained. I had already had the fortune bestowed on me that I was able to buy the karate school in Santa Barbara that I had been training at for 4 years. And so when I got my black belt, my instructor said to me, would you like to buy the school? I was surprised and I did. And for $1,000, I bought that school and I kept it for 12 years.
Oh my gosh.
Being a stuntman. So I had a number of things going on and that's how I eventually got into stunt work after that.
You mentioned martial arts, and I was reading your bio. It took me a while, to say the least. Boxing, master's champion, martial arts boxing, different titles, different degrees, and so many different styles of martial arts. Just amazing. When did you find time to breathe? I mean, let alone do all this.
I don't know. It's a curse and a blessing, Eli. I don't let the grass grow under my feet. Life is really, really short. And as you know, you're getting a little older, not any gray hair like me, but.
I'm getting there. I'm definitely there.
Yeah. And as you look back on your life, you realize how fleeting and how quickly things go by. If after you die, if all you have is your memories to keep you company, you better have a lot of good ones and a lot of challenges. So I've always tried a lot of things. If I do well in them, I'll pursue them. If I don't do well in them, then I'll chalk it up to experience. I've been the benefit of a lot of blessings. So I spent a lot of time in the martial arts. I've been doing it for a little over 50 years now, which gives you kind of an essence of what my age is. I'm still involved in it. I'm actually going to Vegas in July for a seminar at Jeff Speakman's camp. And so I keep my hand in the martial arts. As far as the master's boxing concerned, master's boxing is under the realm of USA boxing. USA boxing is the controlling factor for silver gloves, golden gloves in the Olympics. So after the age of 35, an amateur boxer has nowhere to go. So in 1999, they opened up this new portion of boxing called Masters. So it's for amateur boxers 35 and over. So I've had the fortunate chance to compete. I went to Kansas City a few times and won the world championships twice, the national championship once, and then I've gone on to win other championships around. So I just retired last year from boxing because there is no age limit. Now I promote with Manny Fernandez. We promote the largest Masters boxing tournament in Las Vegas, where 300 boxers come from all over the world, Australia, Germany, Canada, France, Africa, from all over. And we have a two-day event every year in Vegas.
So basically, when we were joking earlier before we started, and you said you should punch me in the face for that. I'm looking at your pictures holding all those gold belts and thinking, yeah, I'd hit the ground pretty quick right after that. Victoria might like to see that, actually. So I was gonna say
we won't know until we try.
Yeah, let's keep it to Zoom right now just to protect.
Dangerous, but my left hand's dangerous, but my right hand, I'm afraid of myself.
That's fantastic. Up to that point, you led a really intriguing life, and then you talk about going into being a stuntman after being a police officer. How the heck did that happen?
Well, let me get a chance to plug my books. It's in a book called A Life at Risk. You can get it on Amazon. There's some other books I've written that are up there as well called Too Old to Tell Lies. But essentially,
I like that.
While I was competing, when I had my karate school, I would go down to Los Angeles and compete as a fighter and compete in katas and weapons. And I met a stuntman there. His name was Kim Kahana. And he had a little stunt school and a place where you could go and train, learn how to do picture fights and high falls and ratchets and what we call jerk-offs, which is being pulled off a horse or a motorcycle. And I trained there over a period of 4 years whenever I could. The opportunity never arose where I could actually join the Screen Actors Guild. It's a catch-22. To be in the Screen Actors Guild, you have to work on a Screen Actors Guild movie. To work on the movie, you have to be in the Screen Actors Guild. So the only way to get around that is to have a skill that no one else in the Screen Actors Guild has, or to be Taft-Hartleyed. So I gave up trying to be a stuntman after 4 years of training. And that's when I became a police officer. And then about 3 years into, 3 or 4 years into being a policeman, I was on patrol one night I got a call to go to Lower State Street and look for a white Jaguar that had been accosted by someone, had jumped on the car and bent the windshield wipers, something like that. So I looked for the car and I didn't find it. It's really interesting how 1 second or 10 seconds of time in your life can change your life completely. I got a dime and I went to a payphone, and because we didn't have cell phones back then, and I called the station. Officer Fratilla was there, and I said, "Hey, I couldn't find the car." And he said, "Well, you should try again, because you know who the driver was. It was John Travolta, and he's the one who's making the complaint." Now, at the time, John had just done Saturday Night Fever and was the biggest star in the United States, in the world, actually.
I remember those days, yes.
So, interesting enough, there was a little bit of drizzle. It was around Christmas time. If I had pulled out of that parking lot from the phone booth and made a left rather than a right, or sat in my car for 10 seconds longer, I wouldn't have made a right onto State Street. And when I pulled up to a red light there, lo and behold, there was the Jaguar right next to me. So I motioned for John to pull over, and he did. And we had a little conversation, and it wasn't really a big thing. They bent a windshield wiper. It was just a fan trying to get to his car. And he said, "So what do you think I should do in the future?" I said, "Well, John, you're the biggest star in the world. Maybe you should." He was with a friend of his, Jerry Worms, who later became a cop. And I said, "Isn't this your bodyguard?" And he went, "No. Can you recommend somebody?" And I went, "Yeah, I think if you go out in public, you know, to a crowded place, you should maybe have some security." So he said, "Do you know anybody?" And I said, "Sure." And I pulled out my card and gave it to him. So he said,
"Self-promotion.
He said, "Oh, why don't you send me your resume?"
Networking.
He said, "Why don't you send me your resume?" And I said, "Eli, listen, back then I didn't know what a resume was, but my brother-in-law was an attorney. So I said, I'm not going to send you my resume." And he said, "Why not?" And I said, "Because I don't believe that you'd even look at it." So he said, "No, send it." So John was living north of Santa Barbara at the time at a private ranch. And so I hand delivered the resume after my brother-in-law helped me with it. And I didn't hear from him for a year. Apparently his mother and his girlfriend both died in the same year. So he went into seclusion and no one heard from him for a year. And lo and behold, a year later, I was lying in bed and the phone rang and a guy said, "My name is Jerry." Can't even remember his last name, but "I'm the attorney for John Travolta and he would like you to handle all of his security from here on going out. Can you come down to Los Angeles and we'll have a meeting?" So I went down, had a meeting with the attorney, who said, I hope you're not the type of guy that takes advantage of John, blah, blah, blah." So I said, "No." I got a speeding ticket, even though I was a cop. I had my black guy Trans Am, and I got a speeding ticket for going over the speed limit back to Santa Barbara. And when I flashed my badge to the CHP guy to try to get out of the ticket, he said, "I'm tired of you cops driving fast through my territory." So he wrote me a ticket, and I barely made it to watch that night. I became John's security. I went to the Golden Globes with him. I put a security detail of cops who were off duty to watch the ranch. One night, John was out of town, and I was watching a TV show with the housekeeper, Renee. There was a scene of a stuntman, Hal Needham, who's a legend in our business, jumping from an airplane to a horse, what we call transfer. And I had mentioned to Renee, I said, "Yeah, man, that's something that I really have been trying to do and I haven't been able to do." Apparently, he told that to John the next day when John came back in the town. So John had me to dinner that night and said, "I didn't know you wanted to become a stuntman." And I went, "Well, you know, John, I'm not one to use people like that." And he says, "Oh, that's how Hollywood works, Rick. It's all nepotism." So he said, "You know, I'm shorter than John. I'm 5'7", he's 6 foot." He said, "But you remind me, facially, you remind me of my dad. And I think you'd be a good stunt double for me. So I'm going to have you on all my movies from here on out. I don't like you being a cop. It's dangerous."
Because being a stuntman is so safe, right?
Yeah, like stunt work is really so safe. But that went in one ear and out the other. And actually, he took off of Philadelphia to do a movie called Blowout. He had already gone, so I figured the promise was not really that sincere. But lo and behold, 3 days before shooting, I got a phone call from the line producer. And he said, "I understand you're John Travolta's stunt double." And I didn't know what to say because I wasn't. So I said, yes, I am. And he said, "Well, we're starting shooting in Philadelphia this weekend. This is a Wednesday. Can you fly out this weekend? And we'll fly you out first class." And I said, "Well, how long would I be there for?" And he said, 3.5 months. And I said, let me get right back to you. So I called my lieutenant and I said, I told him what was going on. And he said, I said, "Can I get a leave of absence?" And he said, "We don't do that with this department. But what you can do paperwork wise, Rick, is you can quit. And then when you get back, you have our blessings. We'll hire you back." So I called the lieutenant, I called the producer back and I said, "I'm in." And they flew me out to Philadelphia. And
wow,
I was doing stunts.
And I see
some interesting stories about that stunt in the book. So if you happen to buy the book, you'll hear the first story of me being a stuntman, which was amazing. I got back 3.5 months later and I went to the department and they said, "Okay, you're back. You want to go back to work?" And we even got you a new motorcycle. And I had been riding Kawasaki 900s and they got me a brand new 1000. And I said, "You know what? I'm not going to come back." Police work is a negative job. You never get praise from everybody. And I was getting nothing but it, that type of, my wife at the time said, "You know, you've made a 180 degree turn from the person you were to the person you are now. You're just so much more positive." So that's where my stunt career started. I didn't work for another year, but after that, I met a man named Alan Gibbs, who was a legend in the business, became my mentor, and my career just took off from there. Well, that's a big answer from the question you asked.
But you know what? That's fun. Because I'm looking on the website, of course. I see the picture of you coming home, as it says here, coming home from the first stunt job with John Travolta, stepping off the plane, and you couldn't see a happier person. You just have... You're glowing. You're so excited.
Eli, I got to tell you, the first night I was in, I had never been in a suite at a hotel. They put me up in a suite. And I remember coming home from work. There was 1,000 extras working that day. And I had to double him driving a Jeep through City Hall and then through a mummer's parade, and eventually crashed into a window. I remember coming back to my room that night. There was the USA Today newspaper that was under my door, and the call sheets for the next day. And I grabbed them and I threw them up in the air. I was jumping with glee. I had never been exposed to signing autographs and people applauding what I had done. It was just an amazing feeling. So, yeah.
You can see it in that picture. It exudes. It just very cool. In all those years and all probably starting from that day, I'm sure... Well, actually, let me step back. I think Victoria said she had a question for you. So let me have her go.
I didn't want to interrupt any part of your story. I was so invested. But I kind of want to circle back. I remember you saying that when you guys did the training, when it comes to stunt performance, are there specialties or you just kind of have to know everything?
Well, nowadays, there are complaints from stunt coordinators that people will come in with a specialty, but not trained in the other genres of the work. When I came in, usually somebody will come into the business with a specialty, whether it's a motocross rider, a motorcycle racer, a car racer. Gymnasts are very popular. So if you come in with a specialty, then you have a base, and the coordinators also know that you're trainable because you're exceptional in one genre. For me, I had to come out, and then I was already an expert motorcycle rider, but I had to learn how to do motocross. I had to learn to ride horses, how to do saddle falls off of horses. I trained doing ratchet, where there's a system that has a bungee and a wire that is attached to a vest that you're wearing, and it pulls you back at a certain PSI hydraulically. But back in the old days, we would just tie a rope to a tree and you'd ride a horse or you'd ride a motorcycle. We'd put a little bungee in it and would just pull you off whatever you were riding. That's how far I go back. The 80s were the glory time of stunts. We were still trying to figure a lot of things out. Pipe ramps were just being invented, which launches a car. Cannon rolls were just started to be done. Air rams, where you stand on a plate and that plate hydraulically throws you into the... All of these things were just starting to be advances in stunt work, making it safety. We had to hide wires back then. Now CGI just takes them out easily. It's not a big deal. So the business has changed immensely over the 40 years that I've been in it. I don't know if that answered your question or if I rattled on too much.
No, it definitely did. Comparing the 80s to now, safety concerns and guidelines, what would you say is the biggest change for that?
Safety has always been the number one issue for us. And we take it very seriously. The stunt coordinators take it very seriously. Before doing a stunt, unless it's a one-off, like crashing a car or rolling a car where you can only do it once, we spend a lot of times rehearsing. A good stunt should be repeatable. So we do it so that safety is primary. Later in the 80s, a lot of the majors like Universal and Warner Brothers, Columbia Pictures, they would assign a safety man to the set for their company. We kind of gave them a hard time at first because they didn't know anything. We would just embarrassingly get them out of our face. But now they're an integral part. And I've become friends with a lot of those guys. I respect a lot of them. They only have our best interests at heart. When I talked about air rams, back in the old days, we used to hit little mini tramps with an explosion behind us to get air. That changed to air rams and ratchets. And nowadays, with CGI and wires, it's much safer because they can add the explosion in post-production. So we're exposed to a lot less danger in that respect. So yeah, safety's a huge issue. We take it extremely seriously. There's still the aspect of hitting the ground hard, as I have over the years and many other stunt guys. There's a lot of artificial parts in our bodies because of that. Listen, when you throw yourself down the stairs or you get hit by a car or you've rolled as many cars as I have, you're doing damage to the interior of your body that sometimes you're not aware of until you get on in years. But it's the same for any physical profession. When you use your body, you know, like it's a theme park, you're going to pay the price of some reason.
Oh, that's so true. Going back to kind of the health and safety aspect of it, I'm sure that over the years it's changed. The safety protocols that had to be followed for not just you, but for any stuntman, stuntwoman on set. What were some of the precautions that were taken or what are some of the changes that you've seen over the years of doing such a, well, incredible career choice? But how did they take care of everybody?
Well, again, it's all about rehearsal time. I know that over the years, rehearsal times have increased quite a bit. Insurance companies that insure the motion picture now have stunt coordinators fill out detailed precautions that they're going to take with each stunt before they can insure that particular stunt on a movie. So there's a little bit more paperwork for stunt coordinators in that respect. So yeah, that it's changed extremely, I would say.
Wow, that's good that it's changed. And I understand there's more paperwork, but at the end of the day, trying to keep you guys safe is the biggest thing. I kind of wanted to ask, if you don't mind sharing, what was the biggest injury you had to face during your time as a stunt performer, and how were you able to recover and return to work from it?
I don't remember any specific one injury. I have never been taken to the hospital. Thank God. I thank God every morning, by the way, for being as fortunate and blessed as I am. However, now I am paying the price. So my injuries are such that after every huge car roll I would do, if I was to do them again nowadays, I would go to the doctor to get an x-ray to see what I've done internally.
Oh.
My back, for instance, there's it looks like somebody stuck a hand grenade, as one doctor said, in your spine and set it off. Yeah, there's lots of stenosis and arthritis in my shoulders. I've had a lot of injuries, and the doctors that we use are the same doctors that take care of pro football teams. So I remember one time I broke my wrist. I went to the doctor, Dr. Nicola, and I said, "Hey, I have to be thrown over a bar tomorrow. What can you do for me?" And he said, "Well, you can wear a brace, but if you don't wear a brace, just hold on to your wrist with your other hand, and that'll be your support." So I did. And he said, "If you break it worse, just come over and see me and we'll fix it." So that's the attitude that stunt people have. We have this big heart and a small brain, and it gets us in a lot of trouble. We want to stunt people. They want to please. When asked to do a stunt again, it's always, "Yeah, we'll do it again." No matter how many times camera has missed it, we'll do it again. That's our job, and that's our desire. It's in some ways a fault. I'll give you an example. There's a, God bless his soul, God rest his soul, Eddie Dano is a legend in our business. He did a stair fall on Blues Brothers where he's in a little school chair. It was horrendous, hellacious. And when he landed at the bottom, a friend of mine, John Landis, who I've done a lot of stunt coordinating for and stunts, went over to Eddie and he said, "Eddie, have you got another one in you?" And Eddie said, "You probably have to bleep that out." But I mean, that's the only stuntman that I ever knew that told the director, "No, I'm not doing it again." But most of the time we'll say, yeah, we'll do it again. And even if we're hurt, we'll do it again. And to answer your question about safety precautions, nowadays, the rehearsal time has increased. And the first time I was exposed to it, I've done 4 Batman movies, 3 with Chris Nolan. And the first time I went to Chicago to do them, they said, "We're going to spend 5 weeks rehearsing these car scenes." And I said, "5 weeks? We usually show up on the day and do them. A car rollover or something on Fall Guy, we used to just show up, get in the car and roll it." But they spent actually 5 weeks rehearsing it. It was something that the Brits brought forward. And nowadays on big shows, we spend a lot of time doing those rehearsals. That's another change that's happened over the years.
Which is good. I'm a fan of that one.
Listen, I'm an impatient guy, so I'm ready to go do it. But no, it's good and it's necessary and it's important. Sometimes you have to temper guys like me.
Well, I would think it's also good for a few reasons. First, the paycheck is increased at that point because you're on the clock for those additional days and weeks.
Well, you know, we get residuals just like actors do. So if you're on a show for 5 weeks or 25 days, you get full residuals for that. And we're paid those residuals for the rest of our lives. And, you know, our pay scale is such that when we show up and we do a stunt, we'll get paid for that day or for that week. And then they add what they call a stunt bump. So if you do a big stair fall, you might get $1,500, $2,000 on top of your regular contract every time you do it. So it gives us an incentive to go bigger when we do a gag.
Now, I also assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, all that practicing has got to make the actual day of the gag, as you just put it, a little bit safer too.
Yeah, it does. A lot of it can, but of course, if you're doing a big car crash or a big car rollover or a high fall of any magnitude, you really are not doing those till the day of the gag. You're not going to rehearse a big stair fall. You can rehearse fire, essentially. For the bigger gags, we're going to wait till the day to do it because there is an element of risk, even with the safety precautions that we take.
For bigger stunts or stunts that pose a higher risk, does the medical staff change Like if it's a lower level stunt, do they just kind of have maybe one or two on site? And then for bigger ones, do they have a bigger crowd for that? Or how does that work?
That's a good question. So on everyday stunts, if you're going to do a little footfall or you're going to do a fight on the set, we just have set medics that are there to take care of us. It becomes any bigger, they always list the nearest hospital on the call sheet. But if we're doing high falls or big gags, we're always going to have paramedics on the set for that.
Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to AACITest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown.
We got the Guinness World Book of Records for the biggest car crash in history on a movie called Blues Brothers 2000, where we crashed 54 cars in 2 days.
I know that scene very well. I know that movie very well.
People today believe that's all CGI, but no, there was drivers in every one of those cars. Me included. Since we had five cars at one time, sometimes doing rollovers at one time, I made sure to have five paramedic ambulances there. So if everybody got knocked out, we'd have five paramedics to take care of them.
Yeah.
Good call on that day.
We had only one guy got knocked out and he was taken to the hospital. He was there for a couple of days and then he recovered and was fine.
That was the only injury in that scene?
That's the only injury in the scene.
That's amazing.
It was funny. I came back to the U.S. I did three of them myself. All of the capillaries in my eyes burst. So my eyes looked like a devil or a demon. When I got to customs to come back in the U.S., the customs agent said to me, "So what were you doing here in Canada?" We filmed it in Toronto. And I said, "Well, I'm a stuntman. We were doing a movie here." And he said, "You don't look like a stuntman." And so I lifted my sunglasses and he looked at my eyes and he said, "Okay, move on."
Here's proof. Here's my calling card. There you go. Oh, man. Well, we joke about how few listeners we have, but one of our youngest listeners, Zachary, had a question that he wanted me to ask you. He was curious, what is your highest fall?
For me, I'm not a high fall guy. I'm a commercial helicopter pilot. I've got 9,000 hours of flying in airplanes and helicopters. It's another job I have, which is another discussion entirely. So I'm not that guy that you call for 100-foot high falls. So my highest was 50 feet. And that scared the demon.
I was going to say, that's high enough for me. That's more than I would do. Yeah.
Wow.
There you go, Zach. 50 feet. All right. Now you know, buddy.
I'm sure all of this can take a toll on you, your colleagues. How do you mentally kind of check in with yourself or see how you're doing? How do you take care of yourself?
Well, as I've gotten older and as my peers that are getting older have found out, we've waited long enough for them to make these replacement parts. And we're very thankful for this. I have a lot of
pretty good at it. Yeah.
Yeah, they're really good at it. I have a lot of friends that have one, two hips, shoulders, knees. And I just found out I'm going to New York. I'm Bob De Niro's stuntman. So I'm going back to New York to do my 12th movie with him this Monday. When I get back, I think I'm going to El Paso to work on a car chase there. And then I'm getting a new knee. So parts is parts and we'll be getting some new parts.
Well, you know, it preps you for the new gig, right?
It preps you. And you know what? It's not going to stop my career. I'm going to still keep working. That's the reason we're doing it. And I've got a lot of friends out there that are ecstatic. A lady stunt friend of mine, we were working on a Leonardo DiCaprio movie that doesn't have a name yet. That's coming out next year, doing a few little car crashes. And she got both knees done. And she was up skiing. She used to be a professional skier. And she was up skiing in a few months. 6 months, I think, with two artificial knees. So, they've got it down. My doctor says it takes an hour to do and a couple of months to get over it. There you go.
It's amazing. Now, leading into that, I mean, you have to be so physically fit, I would imagine. What is some of your training regimen to stay fit and ready as a stuntman?
Well, you know, I had the old slogan that they not only want you to fall out of the tree, but they might want you to climb it first. So you really got to stay in shape. I've been in shape since I was 16, and I've always stayed that way. Nowadays, because of the boxing competitions, I've always been in top shape for that. And now, since I retired from boxing, I work out 5 days a week. I do 25 minutes of cardio. I do weightlifting, push-ups. I can still do 70 push-ups at one time. Something I've done my whole life. Staying in shape is extremely important. And even more important is staying flexible. Stretching is a big part of my routine. You know, when I first got into this business, there was probably only 300 of us that were traveling all over the world. It was a very small community. Now there's thousands of stunt people that are struggling to make a living, and they're all over the United States. Atlanta's probably the center of work for stunt people nowadays. And then, of course, we've got New York and LA, and Canada's big for stunts. And now, because of COVID at the time, a lot of production has gone to Budapest and Europe. So you'll see a lot of movies being made over there and having to travel back into that portion of the world.
Wow. And so you have that regimen physically. What about nutrition?
Well, fortunately, my youngest son, who was the youngest stuntman at 3 years old, the youngest stunt contract ever. He had to jump off a table wearing a mask with some squibs going on. He was 3 years old. He retired after 25 years at the young age of 28. So my son, Mikey, who was a, what was the question again?
Your nutrition to follow
my nutrition. So my young son, Mikey, he's a type 1 diabetic when he was eight years old. And he's extremely healthy. He does triathlons. And he met the love of his life, Joanne. We call her JoJo. And I'm going to be a grandpa in about 3 weeks.
Oh, congratulations. They
already named the little boy Jack.
Exciting. So congrats.
We're very excited. It's my fifth grandkid. I'm really excited about it. She happens to have a master's in nutrition. So nutrition has become a big part of my diet. I never used to. I have a donut every morning, and she says it's okay. So
that's nice of her.
But she basically said, listen, when you have your dinner, when you have your lunch, just make sure there's color in it. Make sure there's a lot of color. So that's her golden rule. Make sure there's vegetables there. Make sure there's fruits. And if you have that during the day, you're probably doing pretty good. And then she's given me some supplements that I take religiously.
So do the sprinkles on the donut count as color?
For me, yeah.
She beat me to the question. I was thinking the same thing.
She didn't say what type of color. She just said color.
Yeah, I know it's probably not something that people should do, but right after I had the donut, that's when I do my workouts. So it probably burns some of it out. You know, I also, every 6 months, I religiously go to my doctor. I have my blood drawn and tested to make sure everything is okay with my cholesterols and all those things. And I recommend that for everybody. Everybody should be seeing their doctors more often. You know, if you have the insurance to do it, I don't care what age you are. If you're over 20, 30 years old, you should be going to your doctor every 6 months and checking your body out. Most severe illnesses are caused because people just put things off. I weigh myself twice a day. I weigh myself in the morning and at night. And if I'm a pound off, I know what I can or can't eat the next day or how much workout I have to do. In the stunt business, our bodies are our tools. We have to maintain them to the best that we can. If we're sick, we can't work. If we can't work, we're not making money. So that's a great question. Nutrition is very important.
I know this is off the topic of exercise and nutrition, but your family and those closest to you, does it ever take a toll on them?
I was gone a lot in my younger years doing stunts, and it took a toll on the family. I think my kids that were growing up didn't get a chance to see me as much.
Yeah.
My older son, Brian, is an extremely successful award-winning stunt man and stunt coordinator and now second unit director himself.
Wow.
So he learned that to make a living, you got to be on the road a lot. But he made the choice because of how I was to not go to Atlanta and work as much as he could. Fortunately, he's been able to stay busy here in LA. He's taken it seriously enough to not be on the road so much so he can spend time with my two granddaughters who are now teenagers. That might change eventually when they move out and he can travel a little bit more, but yeah, it does take a toll. The injuries, I think that's all been expected in our family.
Yeah.
I talked about Mikey. He retired at 28. And the reason was it was already taking a toll on his body because he started at 3. And it's not unusual for kids to start doing stunts young if they're in a stunt family, because if you have to double a kid, the first thing they ask is the last stunt families, hey, because they're out playing with their dads and moms doing this stuff for free anyway.
Yeah.
That's changed nowadays. There's no such thing. Disney got down on it and SAG has got down on it. And there's no such thing as a child stunt contract anymore.
What's some advice you'd give to an aspiring stunt performer trying to have that work-life balance, you know, follow what they want to do in that realm, but then also being there for their families? Because I know in athletic training, it can be hard too, especially if you're at college levels. There's a lot of traveling, you know, you're not going to see your kid, your wife, your husband. And there's a trade-off of, okay, I have to work to get money, but also I'm missing out on family stuff.
Yeah. My son, Brian, without sleep a couple of weeks ago, just to make it to one of his daughter's events, caught a plane at the last second and showed up, having been up for more than 24 hours to attend his daughter's event, which is so admirable. It's a choice. I know a lot of people who are on the road a lot. There are some stunt folks that are on the road a lot. They have a 2-week rule where their wife will come out to visit and spend time with them. Or if they get a break, they'll come back and spend time with the family. Sometimes some of these shows last 3, 4, 5 months. And it's a decision you have to make. It's your career or it's your family. And you try to make it work the best you can. And everybody's an individual. So I can't speak to the fact of the right and wrong of it. It just depends on the individuals involved.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much different professions actually have such similar concerns or issues. And, you know, balancing your life and your work is sometimes one of the hardest things to do. So it's nice to hear the correlation and the struggles that we all go through all the time.
It was harder for me when I was young because all we had was phone calls back then.
Right.
Now, at least you have Skype and you can see your family, you can talk to them. It helps immensely, I think, because everything else is just descriptions and abstract when you're gone. I think that's helped quite a bit. But yeah, it's still an issue.
Yeah.
Good in what we do, it's kind of hard to turn down.
That's always a key factor, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, that and it's fun. I mean, doing car chases and fake fights and doing all and riding horses. I mean, that's all. I haven't worked a day in my life. I've been fortunate to have careers and owning a karate school and the police work and then moving on to stunt work and commercial pilot that I haven't worked a day in my life. I've been, God, for some reason, has looked down on me and said, you're going to have fun. And I thank him every morning.
And that's the key. If you love what you do, you're not really working. You're just getting paid for doing something you love.
Absolutely.
But it seems like to me, it started at a young age with what you said, scuba diving, skydiving, surfing, following, I don't want to say adrenaline rush, but it's the same thing as athletes. It's that little spark of adrenaline you get and how happy you are after, whether it's flipping that car. I watched your reel with being on fire, walking around, taking a punch from Jackie Chan. I mean, that's just got to be an adrenaline rush when you're doing stuff like that.
Well, you know, it's funny. A lot of athletes and stunt people talk about that adrenaline rush, quote, end quote. I have never got off on the adrenaline rush. As a matter of fact, I don't like it. The excitement, the butterflies, having to deal with the fear sometimes of what we do, I don't like any of it. What I do like is the endorphins that come into play after it's over. That is the giant reward. And I do love that. I mean, sometimes an exciting stunt, yeah, it's fun. But the big ones where you're not sure if you're going to come home that day or if you're going to come home and be in a cast, yeah, those are the days I don't like that. And fortunately, I've been blessed in that respect.
We did have another question from our young listener, Zachary. And his question was, what was your favorite stunt ever?
Ooh, I would say the last one I did is always the answer. You know, what's the most dangerous stunt? What's your favorite stunt? I could tell you, it wasn't even a stunt. I was hired to fly a helicopter on Journey to the Center of the Earth 2. And they brought me out there a week in advance just to scout and get the helicopter. And for that week, they had me fly the cast around and give them tours. The job was only one day of flying the helicopter. But that was my favorite stunt because it was doing something that I truly loved.
And I notice on your bio, you have, what is it, over 9,000 hours.
Yeah,
piloting.
I have 6,600 hours flying helicopters. I've flown as a commercial helicopter pilot. I'm a helicopter instrument instructor. I've graduated over 50 students. I've fought fires with helicopters. I've done a lot of movie stunts with helicopters. It's a big, big part of my life. But the most fun movie I ever worked on was Anchorman.
Really?
I stunt coordinator, second unit director, and working on that movie, you can't hear all the laughing that's going on when the take is done. But with Will Ferrell, you got to literally put your hand in your mouth to keep from laughing because the director would have him do the scripted line. And back then we didn't have digital camera. We had 1,000-foot mags of film. So he would run those 1,000-foot mags of film because he would, after the delivered line was done, the scripted line, he would let Will just improv. And many times it was funnier than the scripted line, which is why he had him do it. But working with Will on that movie and all those comedians that had their big start on that movie, was just a blessing. Oh my God, it was so much fun. As a matter of fact, I had my son-in-law, who was really, he was a really shy sheriff's deputy, big Will Ferrell fan. So I said, come by the set and I'll introduce you. So he came by the set and I went over to Will and he wouldn't approach Will. He just was watching. So I went over to Will and I said, that's my son-in-law and he's afraid to come over here. So Will screamed at him to come over. And my son-in-law came over and Will grabbed him in front of the whole crew and gave him this big hug and started bouncing around with him. And then a couple of the other comedians went over to him, grabbed him, and they started humping him up and down in front of the whole crew. The place was crazy, and my son-in-law was bright red, but it's a story he tells to everybody's face. It was an incredible day for him.
Something he'll never forget.
Something he'll never forget, yeah.
No one will forget.
No one will forget.
So with all your accomplishments, the people you've met, do you ever, like, the slightest bit of you question going down this path at all?
No. If I had it to do over again, there's a few little minor changes I'd make. But no, I've said it many times during this interview, I've been so blessed. As I've mentioned, I've become a writer, a published writer, and now professionally I'm being paid to do some stories for people. I've written 5 books. I did a book, a photography book called Sidewalks, which is about the street people of Los Angeles. I just finished my first fictional novel, which is about to be published, called Vasquez the Bandit. So when I'm not working doing movies, I'm sitting right here at this computer writing. It's a new chapter in my life. As I get older, you know, I'm not going to be able to do as many physical stunts as I have in the past. I'm still working. Fortunately, I have people that still call me, but in my downtime, that's what I spend time doing. That.
And you said Vasquez the Bandit, as in
Vasquez the Bandit, yeah.
Vasquez, the real life bandit in the early, was it 1900s? Who has Vasquez in, rocks named
the
after
middle
him.
1800s. It's 18. Funny. Driving by there one day, I was wondering, why is that name Vasquez Rock? So I Wikipedia'd it, and there's a book about Vasquez's life. It's a quite thick book. So after reading it, I thought, well, I think I'm going to write a fictional novel about this and make it an adventure. So I did that, and I have a partner now that's writing the screenplay for it. So hopefully we'll get it made into a movie.
I'm looking forward to that one. I live in Santa Clarita, so Vasquez, yeah. And I knew exactly what you're talking about. That's a big part of the local.
Eli, what's really interesting, it was easy for me to write a lot of this book because a lot of it happens in the Santa Clarita area and north in the San Joaquin Valley. So I'm very familiar with that area, having flown over it so many hundreds of hours. So for me, it was fine. It should be on Amazon sometime, probably in the next 3 months. I have it out to some publishing companies. They haven't got back to me. So if they don't get back to me, I'll self-publish it, and it'll be up there on Amazon.
All right, everyone, keep an eye out.
I know I will, that's for sure. And you really said, I said it earlier, a real Renaissance man. You mentioned your photography, and I was going through just some of the pictures. I saw the sidewalks. I saw some different landscape. Just gorgeous, just a wonderful eye in what you capture and how you capture it. How do you balance all your true loves in all these different arts?
I just try to stay as busy as I can. It's a curse and a blessing. To want to stay busy is fine, but sometimes I look at my postman who delivers mail, and he doesn't have any challenges in life. You know, he does his job, he goes home, he watches TV. It's relaxing. And I admire that in some respects, but I have a curse. I can't sit in this chair too long without feeling guilty. So I have to go out and do something. I went back to college 4 years ago because I had quit to buy that karate school years ago, and it broke my mother's heart. So I decided to go back to school online, and after 2 years, I got my bachelor's degree, and it was in digital photography and journalism. And it's funny, graduation day was on Mother's Day, so I know my mother was happy.
That is sweet. That's very sweet.
You know, there's nothing that you can't do. It doesn't matter how old you are, how young you are. Is there a piece of advice you can give someone who maybe is just a little nervous to put themselves out there and try something new because they might fail or because it might not work out?
Failing is part of it. Any great athlete, I mean, Michael Jordan said something to the effect, yeah, I made all those shots, but I missed a lot too. If you don't try, you're not going to get anywhere in life. I'm a firm believer in this book called The Secret. You either read it, and you have to read it, or there's a CD. A friend of mine gave it to me, James Lua, very famous stunt guy. He gave it to me one morning. He said, I watched this last night, and I can't stop thinking about it. So I watched this CD, and at the end, I thought they say, well, for $19.95, you can get off. There was, they didn't pitch anything. They didn't pitch any trying to make money. I recommend that book to anybody. The universe, if you visualize what you want in life and truly visualize it every single day, you will accomplish what you visualize. Pray on it to God. Pray on it to the universe. I guarantee it, if you do it, it works for me daily. If I haven't got a job, I visualize my name on a call sheet. It may not come the day after, but the universe and God will figure out a way to work it into the plan, and it comes a few days later. Visualize your life in a positive way. Don't let anybody tell you you're too skinny, you're too short, you're too anything. Go out and do it with gusto. And if you don't make it in that particular genre, drop it, chalk it up to experience, and move on to the next one. And don't stop. Don't let the grass grow under your feet. Life's too short. Don't spend it sitting on a couch. My buddy that I talked about, Scott Mitchell, I talk about him in the book. When he got me into surfing, he called me one day and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm just sitting on the couch watching TV." And he chewed me out. And he said, "What are you doing sitting on the couch?" I was 16. After that day, I have not stopped. Get off your couch, get out there and live life, set your goals and make your goals. And whatever it is, you'll be able to do it. Every successful person in life will tell you the same thing I'm telling you right now.
Well, I tell you what, those are words to live by. And yeah. On that note, we've kept you in that chair for well over an hour. And I'm starting to feel guilty because I'm doing the same thing. I need to get going and work, I guess.
There you go. I'm going to go run a marathon.
Yeah, I'm thinking we got to go push the weights that the football team's about to push. We got to do better than that. This has been an absolute joy to talk to you, to get to know you a little bit better, and just get your wisdom about everything a stunt performer goes through. I know it was definitely eye-opening for me, I'm sure. I can't speak for Victoria, but
I loved this. It was great.
This is an absolutely inspiring day, so I want to thank you. I'm definitely going to be looking for the Vasquez the Bandit. Whether it's on Amazon or published, I'll be looking for that one, I promise. Okay. And what was the name of the first book again? I forgot to jot that down.
The first book is called A Life at Risk.
Life at Risk. Okay, people. Athletic trainers, friends, all five listeners.
The second book is called Too Old to Tell Lies. That's about my stunt career. And then I have another book called Hardened Warriors, and that's about Masters Boxing.
When you have time to breathe later today and you take some more pictures, I'd love to see anything. You've been just an absolute blessing for this day, and I truly appreciate it. We've got what we call in Southern California, June gloom, May gray right now, because we're still in May. Not in my classroom. It's bright and sunny right now after talking to you, and I truly appreciate it.
My pleasure, sir. It's a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for making both of our days a little better. This is an absolute pleasure. Have a great day.
You too, guys.
Bye. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Halleck. It is produced by Gabriel Halleck. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Halleck Consulting, LLC.